We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the unceded lands this podcast is recorded from, the Yugambeh and Cammeraygal peoples.
We pay our respects to the elders of past and present and celebrate the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their ongoing cultures and connection to country.
Our guest today, Micah, is speaking to us from the traditional ancestral homeland of the Abenaki, Penacook and Wabanaki peoples, past and present. You're listening to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast.
We're on a mission to deliver high-quality climbing and adventure resources to badass climbing mamas.
And redefine motherhood one episode at a time.
With incredible guests.
Very bad humour.
And just enough Kleenex moments to keep things interesting.
So grab yourself a cuppa or plug us in on the way to the crag.
As we bring you the latest beta from the Mum's Gone Climbing crew.
Hi guys, welcome to the show. I am Eva Rosenbaum.
And I am Nell Gao, and we will be your hosts for today's episode of the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast. We are welcoming the absolutely incredible Micah Birdheart. She's a ice climber, a guide, an author, a filmmaker, a founder and executive director of this incredible organization called Legado. And just, I don't know, I just kind of wish she'd adopt me as like her younger sister. She's just incredible.
She is incredible. She wears so many hats, and I feel like she, like they are all in some way just really beautifully represent who she is. She's an inspiration.
Very well said. Very well said. But before we tell you a little bit more about this conversation, we're going to have a big thank you to our sponsors for this episode and for this series. Who are they, Eva?
They are the fabulous Climbing Anchors and Urban Climb. Climbing Anchors, you guys know about Climbing Anchors by now. They are the one-stop shop for everything adventure. They've got stores in New South Wales and Victoria. New South Wales, they've got a big store in Alexandria, mini stores at 9 Degrees in Lane Cove and Waterloo, and in Victoria, a store in Fitzroy. They also, apart from being incredible supporters of this podcast, have a dedicated discount just for Mum's Gone Climbing listeners and crew members. 12.5% off everything in store and online except for sale items. The code is MGC2023. We'll put it in the show notes for you. I mean, it's Christmas, right? You're basically saving money with that discount. You should just go spend.
They've just had like a massive 50% off Black Friday sale. Oh, did you see it?
Sorry, I was like...
We've been sharing it on the socials. I know a few of my friends have been like stocking up on a few things, so that was pretty exciting. But get along, you still get the Mum's Gone Climbing discount, and they're such a wonderful team, so it's great to support them. Our other sponsor, Urban Climb, we love as well. They're absolutely incredible. They have gyms in Brisbane at Milton, Newstead and West End. They also have one up at Townsville, also in Queensland, and two down in Victoria at Blackburn and Collingwood. They just had the Oceania Championships over the weekend. It looked absolutely incredible. Anyone who got to jump onto the live stream was like such an amazing vibe. So super stoked for the urban community and everyone down there. Also, we have the Mum's Gone Climbing new merchandise shirts. They're on our website. Go check them out.
They are so cool.
They're pretty cool.
They're so cool. If you haven't got your hands on one yet, you've check them out. You'll love them. They're fab.
Yeah, there's lots of options there. And if you were in a different country and trying to get shirts before and like it kept saying that it wouldn't post there, there's a lot more countries that we post to now. So jump on and see if you're involved. If you're not, please just direct message me because I'll see if I can fix it. I'm still working all this stuff out. I'm a bit of a noob. When it comes to this thing. So yeah, go check them out. Support the community. Wear cool shit. It's awesome.
Can we get a shirt that says that? That's so good. I want that one. Support the community. Wear cool shit.
Yeah, that'll be 2024. Amazing. And if you want to drop in on any of our communities, check out our website and our Facebook and our Instagram. It's all on there. And also, if you have your own climbing community that is like focused on mamas and you want to share it with people, just hit us up. Like, we don't care if your mom's gone climbing or not. We just want people to connect and have an amazing time. So shoot us a message. More than happy to let people know about you guys. It's always a joy to walk into a gym or a crag and see families there. So we love it all. So what did you think about Micah?
I thought Micah was incredibly inspiring. Her, the conversations with her are very cool. I think people are going to get a lot out of them. And for someone to have done so much, I suppose, with such an ethic behind what she's chosen to do and how she channels her work, I loved it.
As I've been editing these conversations, it's just been really lovely to sink into what she was saying. And you're right, her ethics and values and the perspectives that she has around all of her experiences, I just feel go to such a deeper level. And it was a really big one for, I guess, for all of us to sit in our truth and to be really honest about motherhood, which, you know, we try and do that anyway here. But I think this even went like to a deeper level, which was really beautiful. Really excited to share it with you. Also, Micah has a book that came out this year. It's called More. And if you love this conversation, you're going to love this book like 3,000 times more. It's incredible. So jump onto her website. We're going to have like the links in our show notes, but get yourself a copy. If you have anyone who's struggling with motherhood, anyone who's about to go on that journey, this book is just phenomenal. And we talk about it more in the episode. But I think with that, we can just drop on in and share the goodness.
Welcome to the podcast, Micah.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
It has been a long time. We've been looking forward to it too for quite a long time because we got a little messed up with the time zones last time, didn't we?
Yeah, that was totally my fault. That was Nell's fault. I have no idea what happened.
It just built anticipation. Just think about it that way.
It's been a good 3 months of just excited anticipation. I love it.
We're super excited for this chat, but we thought we would start, Micah, by you giving us a bit of an intro into everything about you, who you are, what you do, and anything else that you think is important for our listeners to know.
Oh, yay. I always love to think about what's going to come out of me in a certain moment or day. So my name is Micah Burhart. I am a mom of 7-year-old twins. I am a professional climber. I also am the founder and executive director of Legado, which is an organization that works to build thriving futures with Indigenous and local communities working in some of the most important places for our world's biodiversity. And I like to say that on any given day, I touch all of those identities, and how much I am in each of those camps differs with each day.
I think that's something that we're going to touch on a lot more later on, because I'm particularly very interested to hear about how you split yourself, I suppose, between different roles. But I think we're going to start by getting into a bit about your book, More.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like how I discovered you. I remember coming it up on my Instagram feed and I was like, what is this? And I'm like, who is this woman? How do I not know about this woman already? She's incredible. But I think when I read it, what really spoke to me was just, I think it's actually the most realistic and raw account of motherhood that I've read, in all honesty. Like, it was just, like, you articulated so many of those moments in motherhood that are just so raw and so not what you expect before you actually become a parent. And I think that's the feedback I've gotten from anyone who's read the book as well. So, like, firstly, huge gratitude to you for putting that out in the world, because I think it just needed to exist. And I cried a lot in the book, but, you know.
Yay. Yeah. That sounds so – yay, good.
Cried in a good way, because you're like, oh, it's there. Like, you, when you see yourself reflected in something, it's, or read yourself reflected in something, it's just – the best thing in the world. That's that human connection. But I wanted to ask you how the project began, and then what like really motivated you to then share it with the world.
So I love what you just said, Nell, about why it mattered with you, because for me, how it began is when I found out I was pregnant, I just was like, oh shit, like, I'm pregnant. Wow, what now, right? How do I do this? And then very soon thereafter, I found I was pregnant with twins, which was a total surprise and blindside. And so my concept of, oh, I've got this, I'm going to have one kid, I'm going to go crush it as a climber, this is, it's barely going to change my life. Like, and then the universe just spun me around like a little top and said, oh, let's see how this goes. And I think for me, I felt just this burning need to try to understand this flood of emotions I was having that were both good and bad and all complicated and always just in this like turntable through all of them. And that was really my journey through early motherhood, was huge love and huge questions and huge sadness. And I kept trying to find a place to put that. And where I ended up putting it was in letters to my kids, because I've always been a writer. I've always processed that way. And so I started recording audio journals and then writing notes and writing letters to them. And it was not with the intention to write a book. It was literally like, this is how I'm going to get through this. I have to put it somewhere, right? And like, I have friends, I have wonderful friends, but you can't talk to them. You know, they don't have, when you catch them, they're dealing with their child or they're busy or they're traveling somewhere, right? So you have this thing and I'm like, I don't know where to put it. So I'm just going to keep putting it in a place. And then I had like Google Docs and I had audio files and I had all this other stuff that was just, you know, like, I had audio files and all these different pieces. And I sat down and I said, I wonder if this is a book, right? Like, and if it's a book, it never occurred to me not to share it, which is sort of interesting. Like, I didn't have this moment of like, I wonder if it's a book, but it's a book that I would never share. It's more like, could this be a narrative? Could this be a whole story? And if it's a whole story, absolutely. What if you share it? And it was scary to do it, but it also, because what you said in the beginning now is exactly that, which is I said, why don't we talk about it this way? What is missing if this is actually what motherhood feels like? How could we start having a more real conversation and a more raw conversation? Because like, I think about it, like even now, my kids are 7, right? And we have these like big ups and downs, and there'll be like some situation because someone's like, you know, hasn't had enough food or is overtired or whatever's going on. And in the 20 minutes of like hellscape of your child being totally dysregulated, you know, whether it's because they can't, you know, their shoe doesn't feel good when they're 2, or, you know, fast forward to when they're 7 because like they can't make their sword the way they want their sword to be for the Halloween costume. You're like at DEFCON 27, right? But then you get out the other side and you go see someone at the coffee shop and they're like, how are you doing? You're like, I'm pretty good. You're like, but actually 20 minutes ago, I was not okay. Like nothing was okay, but I can't. But we're like, I can just be like, oh, it was kind of a tough morning. But it's like, no, actually, when you're in the firestorm, I feel like us as parents and us as moms, like the emotions that are there are really complicated and really confusing. And I feel like we need a moment to own that and like love ourselves through that versus brush it off. And that's what more is more is like the real time emotional processing of my journey into motherhood.
I love that so much.
And what a privilege to the, like, to all the mothers around the world that you never clocked, like, do I want to share this? Right? Like, I find that fascinating because so many people would feel, I don't know, guarded, protective mm-hmm. over something that was so raw, but you didn't. You shared it with everybody. Like, do you feel proud about that? Do you feel...
Such a great, Eva, like, pride. I don't feel... I am proud of more. I'm really proud of more. I'm proud because it matters. Does that make sense? Like makes me proud. Like when I hear you say what you shared with me about like the book, when I get texts in the middle of the night or emails from people or, you know, that I'm like, yeah, right. Like something was missing and this is helping. That I am damn proud of. Because I think that we have such a broken system in, certainly in the United States, I'd be willing to venture in Australia. I think like all over the world, we're still really broken around, you know, understanding what motherhood is. And there's this opportunity in front of us to shift the narrative. Can we do it? And is part of how we do it by being vulnerable and being real. And for me, you know, I've always written in a really vulnerable way. So, you know, I had a column for Climbing Magazine for a really long time that started in my like mid-20s and ran, and like, that's how I wrote. Like, that's kind of how I broke into the writing world. And I've always written in a personal way. So in that sense, like, this is the most personal thing I've ever written. But it's like, well, why not? Why not share what this feels like? Because again, I think it's the normalizing factor. That's what I hear from so many people is like, oh my gosh, you spoke about something that I thought of. But
yeah,
like, you know, so one woman sent me a picture of the book that she has with all these tabs that she put in for like, you know, different color codes for when she felt different emotions and different things. And it's like a rainbow. It's amazing, right?
That's so cool.
and I think to myself, wow, that's so, I'm proud of that.
Absolutely. Something that shone through in the book was in the very early years of motherhood, how hard that transition was and how you were pushed to your absolute limits mentally, emotionally. And I think, as Nell said before, you know, that's something that we don't talk about. And I think we don't really, you know, you find out you're pregnant and you think, oh, yay, I'm pregnant. And I don't really think that that's something that you factor in, you know, and people can tell you, oh, you know, it's challenging, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do. But I think you'd never believe it, right, until you're in it. Can you tell us a bit more about that part of the journey for you?
Yeah, I think there's actually a weird human condition that we believe we can do it better than other people, which is why we keep having children. Because if you listen to people, right, there's some like fundamentally like self-aggrandizing tendency that we must have that lets us propagate the species. Because if we listen to people, if some people are like, it's really hard and it's really crazy and you're going to love them to bits, but it's going to change your life forever. But, you know, like, I don't, and we're like, oh, that's okay. Because in your head, you're like, I can probably do it better than them. Like, you know, like you might not admit that, but like there's some sort of like something, some screw that's loose. It's like, yeah, well, just like give me a shot at it. Like put me in, coach. Like let me see if I can hit the ball out of the park. You're like, what? Like it's so crazy that that's how we do this, right? Because anything else that all these other people were saying, like danger, danger, caution, caution, really think about it. Like, you know, you might pivot, but that's like, we're just like penguins falling off a cliff or something with this whole situation. here we go.
That's such a good description.
This is hilarious because one of my gorgeous, you know, best friends had her first baby recently. And leading up to it, I was very raw with her about it. And I remember saying to her, oh, you know, like this one night when I, you know, we first started breastfeeding and I woke up in a pool of milk and it freaked me out completely. And she was like, oh, okay. And then literally like, a week ago, she sent this message going, I woke up in a pool of milk and it freaked me out. And I'm like, babe, I told you that was going to happen. But it's like she totally didn't clock it.
You like auto-select that it will be different and better for you, right? I mean, that has got to be like evolution happening, right? Or something like, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think to your question,
they should study it.
Yeah, they should. Someone out there listening. Eva, I think for me, it was, you know, I am a very intense person and I'm quite focused on my work in the world and my, and like what that means. And so when I became pregnant, I didn't think, oh, I knew life would change, but I was determined to still do the things that I was doing, albeit in somewhat of a like unknown different amalgamation, right? But I wasn't like, oh, I'm pregnant, therefore I'm going to stop climbing. Oh, I'm pregnant, I'm going to stop running this, you know, rapidly growing organization. I'm pregnant. You know, I'm just like, nope, all right, I got to do it. And not, I want to do it all. Like, I feel like so many times there's this moniker for women that we are trying to do it all. Like, that was not what it's just more that I didn't want to stop. And it was like, if that's the case, then what is this going to look like? And it was really difficult and it was also really rewarding, right? And like, that's part of the journey that I share in the book is like, I wanted to work. Like, it, you know, my work was really important to me. So putting the pieces together around that were really complicated. And I had a lot of questions about it. I'm like, is this what I should be doing? Like, should I actually be with my kids? Is it okay to be working? Is it like bananas that I'm working at home and my kids are below me, but I get to nurse them all the time this way, but I also never feel like I fully step out. And all of that is in the book, right? And then all of that is also in the book because I'm married to a man who's also a climber, and to see how much my life changed and his life didn't change in the same ways. His life certainly changed, but it just can't be the same, right? He didn't gain 70 pounds and birth two babies at the same time. Like, you know, it's just like not the same deal. So, and for me, the reckoning around all of that and saying, it's not just, you know, you hear people say something like, oh, well, I pivoted, or I decided to stay at home, or I decided to, you know, I got a nanny, or I stopped climbing, or I stopped like rafting, or, you know, doing these risk, perceived risk activities. I'm like, no, take me through your decision matrix. Cause it's not just that you did that. Like, the ping pong of your brain is what I want to know about. Cause I think that's really interesting. Cause I think most of the time we spend time, like, our mental canvas is that ping pong. Like you kind of have these extreme emotions and extreme thoughts and you're like, that can't be right. Well, I'll chew it down. That can't be right. I'll chew it down. But we're not just even, right? And I think that if we invite other people into that mental process, that I think that it normalizes that. And I think that's what's really interesting to me about those big choices. And I was sort of determined to just go for it and not, and like to my detriment for sure. You know, it's like, there's a story in the book of me taking the kids, Peter and I taking the kids to the Red River Gorge in Kentucky in the US, like an amazing sport climbing Mecca. And they were 4.5 months old. It was such a bad idea, like on every level. Like, it was just like a total disaster, from like crusty sheets to the, in the, like, you know, cabin that we moved into, to kids just screaming nonstop, to people coming up to me all the time at the cliff being like, so cool you're climbing, and me just being so mad at those people and be like, this is not me climbing, this is me just like barely being able to keep it together because my children are losing their minds, and me being like, climbing is the stupidest sport ever, you know? But I really want to do it and I don't understand. So yeah, you know, I mean, it, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend my path, but you can, it definitely led for a lot of honesty.
I love that. A lot of honesty. And it's so true. It's just like when people congratulate you for doing things and you're just like, I'm literally just surviving. I don't like you, the picture you have of me is so far from what the reality in my mind is. It's interesting that. And I guess that was something else that resonated. And, you know, we've touched on this already. Like, you weren't just going to have one baby. You found out you were having twins, and it was like this totally different reality to what you had planned as a mother. And I think we all have that, right? Like we've been saying, yes, you have this rosy picture, but like going from one to two in one hit is big. And I think it resonated with me because with my first, I had that same rosy picture. And then, you know, when my son was born, he had a gene deletion, and then I was now the parent of a child with intellectual and physical disabilities. And it's like, hang on a second. It's not only just slightly blurred from what you're looking, it's almost like a totally different trajectory. And I think the other thing that I've been thinking as we've been having this chat is that truth telling, I guess, about motherhood. I do wonder if, and I know from my own journey and all of the conflicting emotions that I felt trying to re-navigate this journey that we've had with our son that we never planned, is the grief that's involved. And I think there's possibly a lot of shame around having such negative emotions for your children who you love more than anything in the world. You know, like, how can I love them more than anything? And yet they've also bring me, and I'm going to say this out loud. Like, my son has brought me the biggest grief of my life, but I love him more than anything. So reconciling with that and then like saying that out loud to someone, you're like, this is the hardest thing, and I would never even probably have chosen this ever in my life. So how do you say that while still holding space for this child that you are responsible for?
Thank you for sharing that. And I think for me, that's exactly it. When I found out I was pregnant, I was having these emotions. I was like, wow, what if all I wanted to do was to like pick up some recording of my mom when she found out she was pregnant with me and know someone, she had also felt like that. But I don't have that because my mom didn't do that when she was pregnant. I mean, like, not many people do. And she certainly didn't do it in the 70s. And so I thought, if I could give my kids this, so that when they have these emotions, that they can say, oh, that's, like, it's normal from my safest person, right? You know, it's like the person that I like most hold, like can anchor me in the world, also felt like this. And I think that there's this, and I appreciate you talking about like that shame piece. Like, it's okay to say it's hard. It's okay to say, oh, it's kind of tough, but to really stand in the middle of the maelstrom and say, this is the hardest thing that I can do. And there is love, but I have to be able to talk about how hard it is. Because if I'm not allowed to really talk about how hard it is, I'm so lonely. Like, and that's what I felt. It's like just so lonely because you can't, like, it just didn't feel like you could be yourself. Like, you were yourself inside of your own, like your own journey where you are feeling those highs and those lows, but to speak about the lows makes it seem like the highs aren't enough. And that's not true at all. It just means that like we have to see the whole picture. And I think if we are just deluding ourselves by not doing that. And even now, like, you know, for me, it really came to a head when my kids, when they were both like kind of 2.5 and they started really having these big emotions around anger. And I'm like trying to parent them through anger, like we all do with the, and I'm realizing like, as it turns out, I don't know how to do this. So here I am trying to tell you these skills for how to be angry. And I'm thinking back to my life when I was 2.5 and my parents' marriage blew apart. I'm scratching my head saying, I wonder how I was talked to at that point, right? Like what kind of coaching did I get through that experience when my parents were going through one of the hardest times in their life? And then like the reparenting of myself through that process, like made that like rawness really come alive, but also me sort of say, I can step into this because if I don't, I'm not giving my kids these skills. And their skills, it's like, we're all trying to give our kids skills to emotionally regulate themselves, right? Like, what if there's another layer to that? We need to give them that when they're adults and they come back to this, because it is not wrapped up in a tidy bow. It's not even like a slate. It's not even a bow. It's just like a mess of ribbon and string and wrapping paper. And, you know, it's like sometimes it's really good for 20 minutes and then it's a hell on wheels for 2 minutes and then it's back. And it's like, that is parenthood and that is motherhood. And we have to de-shame that. We have to, that doesn't mean that you're not a good mom. That doesn't mean that you don't love your children. That doesn't mean that I want to put my kids to bed at night and I hate it when I have to go through the bedtime machinations and they get complicated and I'm so tired and I'm just spent for my night. Like all of those things are true at the same time, but we're only telling a story of 60% of them. And I think it's hurting everybody else who's going through this.
Yeah, that's so well put. And I think, yeah, the emotional regulation thing is very interesting because before I was a mother, I was a very even keel person. Like I was like coasting through life as a chiller and just like, and yeah, and then, and oh my gosh, I had no idea I could be so angry and so frustrated and just lose it. The amount of times that I've lost it completely, like on a weekly basis and when they were younger, daily basis, it was just nuts to me, but I had no tools, you know, like you say, you know, teaching these beautiful little kids how to regulate emotions and to breathe through it and to, you know, do all those things. And at the same time, like, then you absolutely lose it.
Yeah. You're like, can I crawl into someone else's lap too? Like where's the place, you know, like how does this happen? And maybe that moment is we need to give each other that by saying, this is what is actually normal versus, and I think there's something about, I'm like going to so botch this metaphor, but I think about like a frequency wave and like these highs and these lows, and we pretend that what the journey is this middle shot, but actually it's all those highs and lows. So if we, you know, we kind of have some room for the highs, but not even the full highs, right? Like that total deliciousness when you just like your kid, you just love them so much. And like, we're kind of stuck in this narrative and we have to be in these narratives and those narratives. Like they're all together. So that's what I'm so vested in. And I really believe that one of the reasons, certainly in the States, that we're doing a crap job of supporting moms in terms of paid, you know, paid leave, in terms of what, like the ecosystem of care and how we support care in our country is because we don't have real conversations about what it takes. And so it continues to anesthetize it and people then don't step in to support each other. And I think that it, you know, it ricochets through because you also have these gender division of labor that are like continue to keep domestic work and care work in a woman's zone, but yet women are in a separate space. And then you have the further like, you know, bifurcation with women of color. I mean, all of that stuff absolutely comes down to not allowing a full narrative about this experience, because it's almost like there's this control system that comes out that's like, nope, we have to keep the midline narrative. And, you know, 30 years ago, it was an even smaller line of a narrative that was allowed, right? So we've kind of bumped it out. We got to blow the walls off.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think that transition to motherhood and parenting of children, not just in those first few years, but, you know, like in the until they're teenagers and even into teenage years, of course, because they need so much parenting as teenagers as far as just holding space for them. I don't know that it fits very well with the way that our societies in, like, say, Australia and America, Western societies have geared to operate, as in as far as, you know, our 5-day working weeks minimum kind of a thing, the hours that we work, like it just doesn't fit. Like how do you get those systems to work together where you need that space to support, you know, mothers and fathers, you know, if you want to bring things into balance, you know. I don't know that the answers are going to be easy, but like you said, keep on having the conversations and heading in a different direction.
And then you add in something like climbing, right? Like you add in these other pieces of the, like, you know, for me and for all of us as climbers to say, this is fundamental to my being. The irony of how darn hard, like I went climbing today. That's awesome. I pulled it off. You know, it's like, I dropped the kids off at school. I went and I clipped bolts for a while. I came back. I had a meeting on the drive. Then I went and coached soccer. Like back to the, you're like, how do you play those different roles? Like I'm like out of my mind half the day. Right. You know, but like I make that happen because I can sandwich those pieces, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Right. Like last week I woke up and I was supposed to go climbing and I had a bit of a scratchy throat and I was like, oh no, I really want to go climbing. That would be a bad choice because the whole weekend is going to fall apart and you know, it's like what I really wanted was to be kind of sit in 25-year-old Micah and be like, I'm the only one who matters. So I'm going to go climbing because I'll be fine. And I probably won't get sick anyway. And I'm like, 47-year-old Micah with 2 children. It's like, could be a really bad choice right now. Right. So to your point now, I think the systems aren't set up to do this and to really like offer the level of support that it takes for us to be like working mothers, whether we are working only in child rearing or we're working in child rearing and doing other work. And further to that, to think about like what it means to be pursuing your passion and how you do that and how we like normalize that piece and also identify that it is different. I'm just going to go for it. Like, it's really different to have a passion and pursue that passion if you have been a birth parent, right? Like if you've gone through like a major physical change in your body to bring a child or multiple children and multiple pregnancies into the world, like we kind of have these narratives of like, yay, it's amazing. Like this woman, like, look at them go, they're back doing this, but not talking about what it really means to do that or what it means to like go train on 2 hours of sleep and having like puke in your ear that you find when you're out climbing because you're like, I guess I forgot to wash my face today. Right. Like, and here's my child that did. So there's, again, it's like the unveiling that's really interesting to me, right? Because like I can look at someone, I think we all can, having been through it, and you see someone who's out, you know, on a run or who's out surfing, who's a parent with young kids or who's climbing, and you're like, oh, I know what that took today, right? And I think there's a different perspective.
I cannot relate more to like 95% of what you just said. I too, so I've got a 16-month-old and I work, I'm an emergency room doctor and I'm still finishing my training. So it's brutal hours. So sometimes at the moment I'm doing 90-hour weeks, right?
Holy cow.
Completely against my, like, it's not what I want to be doing, but it's like a means to an end, right? Like to finish, that's what I've got to do. And I continually move between feeling this overwhelming amount of guilt for, is this how I should be doing things? Is this okay? Is this unfair on my daughter? You know, even though she's more than loved her other mum and, you know, our grandparents all step in and we've got a huge village. But I continually move between this is good for me because, you know, being a doctor is part of who I am and I want to work and I enjoy working, but then also feeling torn because, you know, sometimes I just want to be there all the time with her. And then I'm there all the time with her and I think, oh, I really need to do a little bit, you know, like it's this constant. And then, you know, you work nights and so, I'm up all night and then I come home and I feel guilty because I can't be completely present. But, you know, so it's just this like, it's this to and fro, to and fro, to and fro. And then I think the things that always held me in balance when I would struggle with life feeling out of balance was climbing and physical activity. That would keep me grounded and it would keep my mental health on track. And the birth injuries that I sustained from having my daughter have meant that it looks nothing like my idea of training and physical activity now is like nothing like what it used to be. And I think realistically, it's probably going to be a long time and probably surgery before I can even move back to a level that's closer to that, right? And so you know, sometimes I have this huge overwhelming sense of grief around, I see people going out for a run, I go down to the gym, I see people at the crag, and I can't, like, it's, no matter how much I think I can push myself to do, some things you just can't do. And at the moment, I just can't do it. It's really lovely to hear someone else sort of speak to that sort of stuff. It's that thing about sharing the journey, right, and opening up the narrative, because sometimes you feel like you're, you know you're not, but you feel like you're the only person in the world going through that.
I think so. And I think what you said about that, that ever questioning, right, that sense of like, am I doing it right? And my husband says to me, he's like, you use the word should so much. And like, what's that from? I'm like, I think that's much more put upon women. You know, it's a sense that if we just remix it, it'll get better for everyone. And I think that for ourselves, I don't know anybody who's confident that the choices they make have always been the right choices. And just that, right? Just the mental load of the questioning that you have. Like, I had it all the time. I'm like, should I be going to the office? Should I not? I don't have an office. Do I want to spend that money? But then I don't get to nurse my kids. But now I'm nursing my kids. And like, while I'm on the phone, do I want to be doing that? You know, it's just like this, like the mental rumination. You're like, and you can be on the outside of it and be like, and say, wow, you're going crazy. That's really not healthy to think like that. But when you're in it, you can't change it. And I think, you know, per your point of this was my ballast, and my balance was that physical exercise. And it is so continually humbling to have these moments when you hit a wall you didn't even know was there. Like, I was coaching my kids soccer, which is hysterical because I don't play soccer at all. So like the fact that I'm like a very, so I'm like coaching their soccer team, and the other coach is saying like, well, let's warm up and let's do jumping jacks. And I was like, oh no, I can't do jumping jacks. Right. Like, and I'm just like, I was like, I will show a different activity that is not doing jumps. Like, I had no idea I could do jumping jacks, but jumping jacks were not happening. And so, like, and I, like, you know, but I can do these, like, I can ice climb a ton. I can do, you know, like, and climbing for me, it is hard because other time before I had kids, if there's something I couldn't do, I could go figure out how to do it. And now it's, and also where you need to push yourself and where you need to be gentle with yourself is a very confusing thing, right? It's like, yeah, today I didn't get exercise because I had to take care of these other pieces. Or as it, like, I can't get on super, super steep routes because my freaking like abdominal separation is just still there and it just doesn't work. And to be gentle with myself versus like, I wonder if I did a different like abdominal training that I could figure this out. And it's like navigating that. And I think that's also navigating ourselves as we are aging athletes, right? Like, there's also a piece of that where like everybody is coming up against that, but you're an aging athlete and you're a mother and you have birth injuries and all those pieces. You're like, how do I navigate through that? And I think I remember like convincing myself that this route was it. I was like, I can't do it because I've had like kids. And then I saw this woman who had kids later than me, did not have twins, but nonetheless had kids when she was older than me, just freaking send this thing. And I was like so pissed and so inspired at the same time, right? So I'm like, damn it, I can't use that. No, this is me. This is not, you can't do this. This is, I can't do this. Yeah, it aches. It aches to have that and to find your new way and to be okay with it. And it's, and I do think it's complicated by, you know, for me, I had my kids when I was 39. So, you know, I wonder if I had, you know, popped out twins when I was 22, if that would have been a different situation. But given the time that I am in my life, you know, there's other pieces of the puzzle that are coming through with that. And then also me saying, what is the balance that you're looking for? Climbing is a really tough sport in terms of how much time it takes. Like, I wish I could be a runner. Like, that would be amazing, right? And like, all the respect to runners who train a ton in the world, but like, climbing is just bananas how much time it takes. And so making that choice to do that, there's also this reckoning of saying, is that fair to my family? Right. And I think like the struggles and people have different ways of processing that.
I want to tweak the topic only slightly because we're talking about, you know, climbing with, you know, family and pregnancy. And this is a topic that we have frequently engaged in, explored on the podcast. And so it always comes up and I love it because I love hearing everyone's take on it. the balance between risk and responsibility, right? Like, I think we would all agree that pre-children, your risk assessment, I think, is somewhat different. And, you know, then there's the sort of perception, the common perception that, oh, climbing, like pregnant, or climbing and children, like that's, you know, that's dangerous. We're interested to hear your perspective on risk. And I suppose also how that dynamic was, given you've got a partner who's also a mountain guide. So like how have you guys integrated that?
Yeah. Sometimes I wish that I could go back in time and be like, why don't the two of you have these conversations before you have children or when you were pregnant, right? Like, because there are some people who I know who did that, right? Like they're like, okay, here's how it's going to work. And your job's going to go like this. And my job's going to go. Peter and I did none of that, right? We're just like, I mean, which is weird because I'm somewhat OCD around planning, but I think it was so, especially the twin piece, you're just like, I have no idea. Like, I'm just going to try to stay, keep them in my body. I'm just going to try to like, so, you know, and so around risk and how we navigate it and how I navigate it, I never talked about wanting to have kids before I became pregnant. And as a young female climber, I now know I didn't ever talk about wanting to have kids because it felt too scary to be put in the box of like, that would make me extra a woman. Does that make any sense? Like, especially in my generation, it felt like it would overly feminize me in a time that I thought the path to success in climbing was to be gender neutral, right? To not be a woman, like to prove that I wasn't a woman, that I could do like there. I'm so glad we're in the world we're in today. That's, you know, like there's, because I think it's radically different. And for me around risk, there was also this sense, because as a climber, it felt like if you admitted that you wanted to have kids and you were a woman, then suddenly people were going to say, well, what's your plan? What are you going to do when you have kids? You're going to keep doing this kind of climbing, right? So already you're in this conversation that you didn't even want to be in the first place, and nor do you have great answers for. And then now, fast forward to having children, what I've realized is that we're so limited at how we think about risk, because we think that it's black and white and that it's like you just chunk off a certain amount of risk because of where you're at in your life. How much risk I can take changes every single day. When you have had very little sleep, when you have, especially, you know, it's one thing. I've actually started sport climbing a lot more since I've become a parent, because it's much easier for my brain to just be like, I'm going to go clip these bolts. Then it's very different than I'm going to, you know, trad climb on like funky gear that's run out. And I'm like still cogitating on this really hard conversations I had with my kid this morning. And that's risk, right? Like, it's like, how mentally present can you be? How tired are you? How pulled in all these different directions? And I used to think of risk more just like, I'm okay with dying or I'm not, right? Like, it was like, it wasn't that simple, but it kind of was, right? It's like, I would never do this. And it's like, you'd have some sort of chart and that chart would forever be there, versus actually, I think risk is what we've been talking about. Risk is the mental ping pong and being able to trust yourself to find your way through it. And like, how well you know yourself to do that. So that's really how I think about risk. And, you know, I mean, I'm a nice climber, and I mean, I get it a lot, right? People are like, oh, I stopped ice climbing when I had children, or I would, you know, it's like that it's like, here you are in this specific place that is extra risky from the climber standpoint. And I think that I've become much more thoughtful about risk as a parent. That doesn't necessarily mean that I've always made choices to de-risk a situation. It's more that I'm aware that you have to look in 360 to really understand risk, and you yourself and who you are in that moment is also a part of a calculus. Does that make sense? Like that's like super critical to me. I would also say that sometimes when we talk about risk, it seems like it automatically goes with like dismemberment or dying or something. You know what I mean? And like, I think about risk around emotional risk too, right? What is the emotional risk, not from an injury, but from repeatedly being out of the mix with your children, like to decide that you're going to pursue something else? Like, what is the risk and the consequence of, there are risks and consequences that we take because we have to, because of like a job or something like that, right? Where we're like, this is our job, and so we have to go do it. Then there are the ones that we can self-select into. And I feel really strongly that I need to be present in my kids' lives right now for the emotional risk. It's not like going on a 3-month climbing trip to me is not about the risk to my body and will I survive. It's more, do I want to put that risk into my family, into my young kids? And that's me. That's like very personal. And that has to do with how I grew up and some repair that I have to do around that. And so like I become more comfortable in those choices, and other people can make other choices. But that for me is like has to be part of the conversation.
I appreciate you bringing that up as well. I haven't heard you speak about it in that way as far as the emotional risks involved, but I think it's something that we weigh up all the time. Like this weekend, which is really exciting, I'm flying down to the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, and I'm going to meet Eva for the first time face-to-face, which is amazing. So exciting. We're going to do some climbing in one of Australia's climbing meccas, so that's also super exciting. But you know, my kids are now 11 and 7. No, 11 and 8. Oh, my gosh. 11 and 8. And, you know, so they can tell me. They can very well express how they're feeling, and they're telling me they don't really want me to go because they'll miss me. And it weighs on me. It's only 3 days, you know, but then but it does weigh on me that I'll be away. I know that it's okay and that it's the right thing, but it certainly does make an impact still. And especially because it is something like that we're going to go and we're going to go climbing, you know, we're going to be on multi-pitches, and you think, what if I do that? And then something does go wrong. You know, it, all of those things weigh on it. So there's that physical element of death and dismemberment, as you said, but also that emotional element of like, I'm stepping away for them and they really don't want me to. And they're telling me they don't want me to. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, because I think it is important.
I think we don't talk about it enough. I think it's this sense of like, well, I mean, I read this really kind of odd book the other day to my kids. You ever have a book at your, and you're like, where'd this come from? Like, and you're suddenly like halfway through reading it to your kids and thinking, huh, I kind of want to read in advance. Like, who brought this to your home narrative?
I really needed to be censored before you went in there. Anyway,
so I'm reading this book, and it's, you know, all about how these dads have, you know, like kind of like the grandfathers and the great grandfathers, this legacy of them all being these different types of explorers. And the book ends in this really nice way where there's a father and son, and the son's like, well, you're not really cool. And the father says, no, what's cool about me is I'm trying to be with you, because none of those other dads actually like he was a mountain climber and he was an astronaut and he was at this, but like, this is my cool thing. This is how I explore. And emotional to see that. And I think that we all need to have that conversation, because like anybody who's stepping out of family to pursue work or like recreation or like passion projects, I think we need to bring that conversation. It's like, how do we handle the emotional needs for our kids for that? Because there's all, it's like, maybe that's just, maybe you are lucky, one of those couples who's like, I'll do this, you'll do this, this is how it'll work. I actually think most times it doesn't work as well as most people think it does, or there's more conflict than we want to admit around that. You know, you can think one thing and then you're in the reality and you're like, hold on, I did not make this deal. Like, how would that change? Total timeout on this. But I think we have, like, we talk about this stuff, but we don't talk about the kids. And the kids, like, as we all know, like, look at all of us. We have very different kids, and they have different needs, who have like a different thing happening in their life at the time, and they're not static. But yet we keep having this conversation. It's like, well, it's okay for me to, you know, this idea, maybe we have like a male idea of how to talk about risk. It's okay or it's not for me to go on an expedition to Everest. Like, that's some, like, it's like, okay, let's rewrite the code. Let's start talking about what's at stake. And like, you know what, this felt like a really good idea, but right now it doesn't feel like the great thing for my family, because my little girl's like having a really hard time, and like, I can't do it. Right. And I think like that's so scary. That would have terrified me when I was in my 20s. Cause it's like, oh man, that like, we're going to go backwards. If we got to get, like, we just have to tough this out. I said recently, it's like, we don't need the same narrative. We need all these narratives, because that's how we actually have power. And I think for a long time, women got to where we were by kind of agreeing to have the same narrative. And now we need to be like, no, look at all these different ways we can do this. And I think that's the risk conversation that I'm pretty fascinated by.
We are going to leave our conversation with Micah there for this episode, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time to talk with Micah more about motherhood, balancing it all, because I think she does this so well and has the best philosophy around it, and her incredible organization, Legado.
Yep, it's an episode not to be missed. A massive thank you to all of our listeners at home. Have a fabulous couple of weeks. Enjoy your climbs and we'll see you soon.